scores! Gilmore scores! With 1-3 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, January 15th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. This hour of Flames Talk and every hour of Flames Talk, available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. This hour, a spin around the Pacific Division with Jonathan Davis of NHL.com and VSiN Sports. That's a little bit later on. But excited for this because I really am happy with my the way I'm coining this. I'm a big alliteration person. And Megan Mickelson joins us now. We are in the middle of the week. Wednesday is midweek. So brilliant old Steinberg. Midweek Mickelson on Wednesdays. We're going to chat with the color voice of the Flames. Megan Mickelson joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Mick, do we like the name Midweek Mickelson? Does it roll off the tongue the way that it should?
It definitely rolls off the tongue, but like I feel like we can do a little better.
Hey, I'm open to suggestions.
Yeah, I don't have one off the top of my mind, but I'm thinking we can do a little bit better than that.
I'll work on it.
You've got homework for next week.
For day one. Well, no, I'm open to suggestions. I've done my best. I put forward.
I do believe that. I do believe
I've done my best here. I'm not creative. I don't have good ideas.
To be fair, I am just like we just found out today that I would be coming on in the middle of the week, right? So we haven't had a lot of time. So I can try to put my creative brain to work too and help you out a bit.
I mean, if we did on Monday, it could be Monday Mickelson. Anyway, lots to talk about as the Flames are now into the third quarter of their season. It's funny, we talked a little bit about this last hour with Wilsey on the roundtable. And I'm curious as to where you are because, okay, Tuesday night, second half of back-to-back, third game in four nights. But as we talked about on postgame Tuesday, Mick, like not a whole lot there offensively. The Flames struggled to generate anything dangerous against the Blues in that 2-1 loss. Four slot opportunities all night, just three and five on five. Like it just was a pretty punchless game for Calgary, which I think we all understand they happen, especially under the schedule circumstances. But we also know that 43 games in, that this has been a team that has not always had the easiest time generating offense. Like how fixable is that, or how much room is there to improve drastically between now and the end of the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, it's like for sure for me, it's concerning the lack of offense. It makes it so much harder on your goalies and on the entire team from a defensive standpoint. Like you almost feel like watching the game if they get scored on. It's like, oh man, you know, because you know how hard of a time they have scoring goals. But you know, I do think it's, fixable. You look at the guys that aren't producing right now and, you know, Yegor Sharangovich, Andrei Kuzmenko is not even in the lineup. One thing that was concerning for me the last two games, Jonathan Huberdeau, it was two straight games with no shot attempts at all. And that's definitely something that's fixable for him. We know that he's been shooting the puck a lot more lately. So, you know, it is concerning, but I do think that it's fixable. What I think kind of needs to happen, and, you know, I've talked to Kyle McLean about this a little bit, and I know we've talked about it on the pregame show as well, is just the lack of opportunities and offense that come off of weak side plays in the O-zone. So, you know, there's they call it in hockey terms the Royal Road. So if you drew a line from the middle of the net on the goal line out straight toward the blue line. It's called the Royal Road. And whenever the puck crosses that Royal Road or that midline in the offensive zone, like the chances and the opportunities and your likelihood of scoring increase drastically. And the Flames right now, and they were this low, I think it was, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think we chatted about this, Pat. They're 32nd in percentage of shots coming off of weak side plays, 31st in offensive zone cross ice passes per game, and 32nd in percentage of shots where the goalie is in motion. And so, you know, those are some pretty, I mean, scary stats when you think about it. So I think that that's an area they can improve upon. And Cale McLean's told me, like, that's something they talk about and they work on, is those weak side plays and more lateral puck movement in the offensive zone. I also would like to see more, like, from the defensemen. Going into the game yesterday, the Flames were tied for third fewest points from defensemen in the NHL, which is very different from what we saw last season. So it's not just the forwards, like it's the D too, like a little bit more from Rasmus Anderson. I think he's had more of a shot mentality the last two games. He had 9 shot attempts Tuesday against Chicago, 5 shot attempts last night against the Blues, and could get a couple more goals and points from Mackenzie Weegar too. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's obviously something they're continuing to try to work on, but I would like to see more weak side plays and a little bit more from the defensemen.
And from my perspective, this has to be something that's solved in-house. I don't necessarily see a fit on the trade front, certainly not necessarily a true hockey trade formulating here in the next couple of weeks, where the Calgary Flames are magically going to acquire somebody that's going to pump, you know, 25 goals in the rest of the way here. This is something that has to be cured internally. And Mick, you mentioned all the metrics about the Flames being 30th or 31st or 32nd in certain types of opportunities and scoring chances. And you run through the list of players that aren't scoring necessarily to the pace they were last year. And I think outside of Jonathan Huberdeau, you can't really include Matt Coronato in this conversation because he's a rookie, but there aren't really any players from last year that you don't want to necessarily call them career years because they're a career year for a season, but even playing or scoring at the same pace they were last year. And you look at Mackenzie Weegar, who was a 20-goal guy last year. He's sitting at 5 through 43. You look at Michael Backlund in single digits. You look at Martin Pospisil, for example, with 2 goals in 43 games this season. There's no hero to ride in and just put the scoring responsibilities on their back. At the same time, you need to solve this internally with the guys that you do have to give your goaltending, to give your team just that little extra space to be able to afford a mistake. Because right now you're essentially, when we saw it Tuesday night against the St. Louis Blues, you have to play mistake-free hockey if you're the Flames, and a one bad error can end up in the back of your net and be the difference in a 2-1 loss.
It's Mick, it's hard for me. Like I do wonder if like I we saw the blue line being quite involved offensively earlier in the year, in the really early stages of the year, where maybe offense was popping a little bit more, so that the offense was coming from guys like Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar, so on and so forth. But you're right, that's dropped off a little bit. Short of them being able to find what we're talking about, and Mick, you and I feels like we text about it every week about, you know, how could the Flames be close to finding that center, and we all know that they could use a young right shot center, and if they could find that, it would be awesome, and maybe they can between now and the beginning of March at the trade deadline, but I don't know if I'm like holding my breath for it. And I don't know if this is the year that the Flames should go searching to, you know, just find a short-term fix for their team to kind of pump them up and help them for the stretch drive and maybe the playoffs. So it kind of feels like realistically or most likely, if this is going to improve, it's going to have to be from a lot of things that you talked about, you know, some not structural changes, but, you know, maybe just some tweaks in terms of the way they go about things, or some personnel starting to be a little bit more productive, whether it's Sharon Govich or the blue line, like you talked about. It feels like if it's going to happen, it's going to be some sort of internal fix.
Yeah, and I mean, when there's multiple players that are having a hard time scoring, you know, if I don't think it's just, it's not one player that's going to make a difference, a huge difference anyways. You know, it's when there's multiple players that are having a hard time finding offense and scoring, to me, that tells you it's a structural system issue that needs to be kind of addressed. And I think they're trying to address it. But, you know, when you want to make changes like that, and it's not natural for a lot of guys to be making those cross ice, cross seam passes, those are hard changes to make. So, yeah, to me, it's not a, you know, going to be one player that's going to make the difference. And you talk about bringing somebody in. I don't think if you bring one player in that's going to fix all of their problems. I think it's going to have to be a number of players that step up and find ways to score more. But I think that the changes that you have to make, you know, to generate more offense, I think that's really what needs to happen to solve this problem. You want to hear another funny stat?
Yeah. Yeah,
I chuckle at this one. So the Flames are fifth in percentage of shot attempts through traffic, but they are second in own shots blocked per game. So they block their own shots, like second in the NHL in blocking their own shots. That is like a hilarious statistic to me. But what it does tell you is, like, they're guys are trying to get to the front of the net. Like, they're trying to be screened in front of goaltenders. But I just thought that was a funny one. So the defensemen are trying to shoot the puck, but it's almost like there's a little bit too much traffic maybe at times because they're hitting their own guys with it.
Yeah, that's funny. And maybe not so much in St. Louis, hey? Like that wasn't so much of an issue against the Blues.
No.
But generally, that's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they had a really hard time against the Blues getting to the middle of the ice. And that was something that when I chatted with Kale on Tuesday morning, they knew that was going to be an issue, getting to the inside, because the Blues, their defensemen are just so good at boxing guys out and not letting you get to the net front. And Jordan Binnington, you know, pretty much saw everything that was shot his way. And you know, that too, he talked about, you know, needing to play with more pace in the offensive zone. So when you outpace the other team, it makes you a lot more harder, like, to cover and to box out. If you're not static and stagnant in front of the net, if there's movement, flash screens, that sort of thing, that's how you get to the middle of the ice. And I know that as a defenseman, like, if a forward is just standing in front of the net, you can box them really, really easily. But if they're constantly moving all the time, it's really hard to cover them. So that's one thing that I would like to see on Thursday night against the Blues, is just more pace and more movement from everyone in the offensive zone.
We're chatting with Megan Mickelson, color voice of the Flames here. It's Flames Talk on a Wednesday. Steinberg and Vickers along with you too. One of the things that Vicks and I kicked around in the first hour of the of this Wednesday is the difference in run support or offensive output between Vladar and Wolf, and once again that kind of came into play on Tuesday night in St. Louis. Just the one goal didn't come until the third period, and over the course of the season, it's about a half a goal difference between when Wolf's in net and when Vladar's in net in terms of how much the Flames are scoring, which partially plays into Vladar's record for sure. You know, we hypothesized some reasons for that. You know, the different spots that Vladar's gotten in first half of the season, maybe getting into, or not even maybe, definitely getting into more difficult situations than Wolf was. Maybe the team playing a little bit more confident in front of Wolf as opposed to Vladar. Bad luck, of course. I'm just curious as to, like, half a goal a game over the course of more than half a season for a team that doesn't score very much, that's a pretty significant gap.
Yeah. And to me, a big part of it is, a huge part of it is the way the team has played in front of Vladar when he's been in the net, and the difficulty of starts that he's had. And, you know, I think about the game on Tuesday night against the St. Louis Blues, and, you know, he looked shaky off the start, but who could blame him? Like, he hadn't played since January the 2nd. So that's, you know, 12 days between his last game and that start. That's not an easy thing to do for a player. I actually think it's harder for a goaltender to go that long between games. And I remember I chatted with him earlier on in the season when he went a long stretch. I believe it was 11 days and he hadn't had a start. And, you know, he talked about how hard that was. And, you know, you feel like you haven't played in like a month. So to get back into the game, and then, you know, for the first 5 minutes, the team wasn't great in front of him either. And, you know, the amount of chances that they were giving up early on in a game, rather than just letting him kind of feel a couple of easy shots and settle in, like there was none of that. So, you know, I do think for me, the biggest factor has been the starts that he's gotten and just the situations that he's been in have been more difficult, whether it's road games, whether it's second half of back-to-backs. He's just been in a much more challenging position than Dustin Wolf has been. And for me, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, there's the road starts. There's the second of back-to-backs, which Dustin Wolf hasn't seen one of yet. And it's the quality of competition, I think, that Vladar has faced, particularly in the earlier part of the season where you're trying to spot start Dustin Wolf a little bit. I still am a little baffled that it's half a goal a game fewer scored for the Flames when Vladar is in net versus Dustin Wolf. Like, to me, that is a baffling mm-hmm. figure, where it's quite literally half a goal less per game that Dan Vladar has to work with. The margin of error in his game is that much less, just based on the fact that the group in front of him isn't able to score. And some of that is, again, quality of competition. It's being behind a tired team in the second of back-to-backs or on road trips. But just to have that big of gap, I still can't necessarily put my finger solely on a reason to say, well, the Flames are, you know, compensating so much defensively because they're that much more comfortable for Wolf. I don't fully get on board with that. Some of it's just anomalies in the way the hockey world works, but to me, it's just incredible how Dustin Wolf, when he's in there, just gets that much more offensive support and makes his job that much easier.
And yet, Mick, like, isn't it something that, I mean, at least in the next little while here, probably something that Vladar should kind of get used to, because it feels like, I mean, heck, yeah, we might not see him again until the next back-to-back next weekend, and that could be a difficult one with it going Minnesota to Winnipeg. Like, that might be that Winnipeg game next Sunday might be the next time that we see Vladar in.
Yeah, things aren't going to get any easier for him. That's for sure. Another thing that, you know, comes to mind when we talk about that gap and that difference, I think about Dustin Wolf and how well he's played the puck and what a massive difference that makes in getting out of your own zone and up the ice. Like, the amount of times that he's facilitated the breakout and just helping the group spend less time in their own zone and get up ice more quickly. Like, you know, I wonder if that has a little bit to do with it as well. But yeah, I think, you know, at this point, I think Vladar is just, he's going to have the tougher starts. I really don't see that changing at all. I think, like, the important thing is for me that you have two goaltenders that whenever they're called upon, that you feel comfortable and confident as a player playing in front of them. And, you know, you look at Dan Vladar's game last night, and, you know, to me, the way that he was able to settle in and some of the saves he made, like, he was lights out, especially in the second period. Mm-hmm. As a player, like, I would have a ton of confidence playing in front of him. So I think that's obviously, when you look at it from a team standpoint and how important it is for them to be getting points and winning hockey games right now, that is the most important thing. And, you know, Dustin Wolf he's also just been better, I think. And I think that's something it's fair to say.
Last one before we let you get back to your day. I know that he didn't score the last game. I know that on Monday we thought he scored. It actually was a shot that went off of Michael Backlund's stick, so he got the primary assist. But, boy, every night it feels like you're coming away from a Flames game saying, Oof, there's another really solid night for Matt Coronato, or there's another night where Coronato was right in the thick of things and right in the fabric of the game, and a big reason for why the Flames had whatever level of success they might have had that night. He that development's been pretty rapid from number 27 this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really, really impressive. And I think that he was the Flames' best forward against the St. Louis Blues on Tuesday. He was just lights out once again. One thing that continues to stand out for me, and I mention it quite often on the broadcast, is just his speed and how much faster he looks to me. And yeah, I chatted with him earlier on in the season when we were in Montreal, and you know, I asked him, I'm like, you look so much faster. Like, what did you do? What did you change? And he said that he worked a ton on his skating in the off season, that he felt like he was, too hunched over, too far bent over, and that he's now like, he's trying to be more upright. And as a skater, you get more power in your stride. When you're a little bit more upright, you get a longer stride and a better push. So a lot of it for me is his speed, and that has allowed him to get into positions better. You talk about his play away from the puck and, you know, just the improvement in his skating that I've seen, that it's allowed him to do that. And, you know, just obviously being more confident and more comfortable. He seems like he's settled in with the team and, knows how he needs to play to be successful and impactful on a consistent basis at the NHL level. And his shot too, it's something else. Everyone talks about the release. For me, it's like the follow through. Like, I don't know if you guys see that too, or when he shoots the puck, it's like he puts his whole body into it. And it's like, he's trying to fire it right through the back of the net. And so his shot it's been something else. And, you know, he's at the point where, and I know we chatted with Ryan Huska a little while back, Pat, and he said, you know, they think that he's very close to being a dangerous scoring threat every single game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, right now for me, like, I think he's there, but yeah, he's been so impressive and really fun to watch too. Like, what a treat to watch him.
The thing that I've grown to appreciate in his game, outside of that shot, of course, and the way you put it, where he's trying to shoot the puck through the net, I think that's 100%. That's what crossed my mind as you were sort of detailing it. But the one thing that I've really grown to, and it's grown over the course of his time as a pro, is his puck protection skills and how strong he is on his own stick. Further to that, though, he understands when to abandon a player, put the puck in a safe spot, particularly once he gets over the offensive blue line, because we both know the two killer spots for turnovers, your own blue line and the offensive blue line. And for me, Matt Coronato's awareness of when to continue to try to make a play and where to put it into a safe area where maybe a teammate can get to it, or even he can do the dump and then chase it himself. I think he's come a long way in recognizing situations at both blue lines, but particularly once he gets across the offensive blue line.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
Well, that was fun. And before we let you go, Mick, I'll bounce the text line has a few ideas here in terms of a name. If y'all don't like my name,
okay.
Let's see what the text week
we'll put it to a vote
has to come up with. Midweek with the magnificent Megan Mickelson. That's a lot of alliteration. How do we think?
Okay. I mean, I like it. It's a little wordy.
Robin Coldale.
I'm being picky.
You are, but hey, I'm high standards. Robin Coldale says, Hump Day Mick. Midweek.
No.
No, okay. Midweek Mickey.
Oh. Maybe.
Mick in the Middle.
Oh, that one's interesting.
And picking Mick's Mind Midweek.
Oh, huh.
I still don't think we've got, I don't know if we've got a winner here.
Let's table those.
Yeah. I like that idea. Let's table those. Mix Midweek Musings.
Oh, okay. That's creative.
Yeah. I think we got to workshop this one a little bit more. That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
We all have homework. Have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. Thank you, pal. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Megan Mickelson, color voice of the Calgary Flames, joining us on Wednesdays here on Flames Talk. Lots to dive into weekly with Mick, and she joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time to head down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Again, it is our buddy Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Lots of Flames betting intel. He nailed both of his last two Flames bets. Monday against Chicago as a road favorite. Tuesday against St. Louis as a road dog. Jonathan Davis on Twitter at West Coast Hockey, West Coast HKY, always with some great betting intel for the work he does at VSiN Sports, and always spins us around the Pacific Division. He joins us right now from Southern California. JD, first of all, more than anything else, just hope you're hope everything is as good as can possibly be where I know you are. Hopefully you're safe and your loved ones are safe. So on and so forth. I know the last week or so, it's been something else down there.
It has. I mean, Pat, thankfully, and I appreciate the kind words. I mean, where I am, not affected, thankfully. Just way south of all the, the craziness that's going on. But like many people out here, have numerous friends that unfortunately have lost their homes. And it's unbelievable what's going on here. It looks like, it's just a bad movie you would hope, but yeah. It's not. Being able to watch games and, right now just kind of escape from reality, it has been a help. But it is, it's miserable just with what's going on here, no doubt.
Well, let's talk some hockey then as that distraction, yeah. Which I know that sports has been a huge distraction for a lot of people in SoCal. Nice to see the Rams take care of business in Arizona. That was neat to see the Rams playing for LA and beating Minnesota on Monday night to wrap up Wild Card Weekend. Maybe before we go too much further, just you have the intel going into both games. Flames are quite good when they're a road favorite if you're betting, and on the other hand, they haven't done so well when they're a road dog. Hey,
yeah, and let's just eliminate the betting aspect, because some people just do frown upon the whole topic of when they hear betting, it's like a dirty word. But look at it from the standpoint, Pat, that the teams that the Flames are perceived to be not as good as, they don't do very well against. I think it's 3-9 or 3-10 in games where they're considered to be the inferior team. And when they're perceived to be the better team, winning the games they're supposed to win on the road, they're doing it. But they can't beat the good teams or what's perceived to be the better teams on the road. And that's kind of where that's the way it's another way to spin on it. It's just for me, it's another form of analytics. And don't, for those who just think that betting is a dirty word, I just think it explains things, because when you take a look at a team's record and you can break it down in that manner, I think it gives a little more context, to a team. And the Flames aren't the only one that are in that situation. I mean, there are numerous teams. Look, the Vancouver Canucks are the same way. When they're perceived to be the better team on the road, I think they're 8-2 this year. But when they're the inferior team or the underdog,
yeah,
they're not winning.
Well, and it's Vancouver that the Flames are in the chase with after Vancouver got rolled up by Winnipeg on Tuesday night and the Flames lose their game to St. Louis. Still a 1-point edge for Calgary with even games played for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. Where are we on this Canucks team that has finally started to get healthy? Hughes is back, Pettersson's back, Roenick's back. Like, they're getting healthier, but where are we on this Canucks group right now?
That's a really good question. I mean, there was all this such good feeling around the team, you know, after that game in Toronto. I mean, it was like, you know, everything was, you know, things were stacked against them, you know, having to fly in the day of the game. And you had just come off a bad loss. And it sure seemed that they heeded the words of their coach after that bad loss in Carolina, where they just couldn't generate any offense whatsoever. But then, look, it's no crime to lose to the Winnipeg Jets, especially on home ice. But to lose it in the fashion that they did, that to me is that's the concerning part. And it just, you know, for that one big step forward they took going into Toronto, it seemed that they took two steps back last night in Winnipeg, and that game was over, you know, thanks to Kyle Connor in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure was. It's the old natural hat trick in period number one for Kyle Connor. Opened up a 3-0 lead, and then, yeah, the Jets rolled from there. This is not like, okay, so they play Winnipeg on Tuesday night, but it's not like the schedule. They've got some heavy hitters coming up, too.
Yeah, they got L.A. coming up in a couple of days, and you know it's not going to get easy for them by any stretch of the imagination. They do have a tough schedule, but look, right now, you know, every game right now I think is tough, or it's True. Become tougher just because of the way things are going right now for the Canucks. So, yeah, the L.A. game will be another test. They've played well against Los Angeles in the past, but you know. It's just hard to figure out what Canucks team you're going to see right now. And they're getting an LA team that, you know, Pat, look, that team's prepared to win 1-0. I mean, they don't score. I think they scored 4 regulation goals in the last 4 games. And they seem very comfortable in doing so, in playing that style of hockey. But I personally, for me, I just don't think this is a long-term recipe for success. And, you know, talk to Kings fans out here, and there people are just, you know, people are waiting for the shoe to drop on this team. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to doubt them right now, but they put a lot of pressure on both their goalies when just by the very nature that they're not scoring goals right now.
Is that something, you know, that because they do, they play a really tight brand of defensive hockey. They don't give you much. They've gotten good goaltending, specifically with Darcy Kuemper in net. Or is this a team that you see an offensive turnaround? We've talked a lot about that here, for instance, about the Flames and how this is kind of what they are. They're probably not going to be a team that just turns into an offensive juggernaut at any point this season. Do you like? Are the Kings underperforming offensively, or are they just an offensively challenged team?
I think they're an offensively challenged team. I mean, really, look, outside of Adrian Kempe, you're hoping goals will happen. I mean, look, Kempe's a legit scorer. No reason why, you know, he's going to be in that mid-30 range. But after that, you know, it's the same story for me in Los Angeles. If everybody plays to the style of hockey that the coach wants them to play to, then they're fine. I mean, look, the game against Edmonton a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles, that was a highly entertaining game. That was the game that Byfield scored in overtime, and the Byfield Fogel Janot line was one that dominated the Oilers that day. It's just not a team that there's just other than Kempe, outside of Kempe, I don't really expect anybody to score on a given night. You're hoping for it, but you're not expecting it.
Yeah. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He's our Pacific Division insider, NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Let's move to Edmonton as they just continue to have nothing but success against the Kings. Another win against Los Angeles this week, the 1-0 win over LA. But it's not just the Kings that the Oilers are having success against. Once again, after a slowish start to the season, this Oilers team, you know, midway through a year, has caught absolute fire.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other factors is the goalie. I mean, Stuart Skinner is now 9-0 after a loss. That's going to put the halt to losing streaks when you've got a goalie that bounces back that well after a loss. So, a lot of good things, the evolution of Ty Emberson on the blue line, I think has been one of the quieter and better and really good feel good stories in Edmonton, because we were all, you know, the talk was, what are they going to do with this blue line with all the guys they lost in the offseason? And Everson has been a player that they, you know, they put a lot of trust in. He's earned the trust of Paul Coffey and Chris Knobloch, and you're seeing this guy out killing penalties and in the late stages of hockey games. So it's not because they don't have anybody. It's that he's earned that right to be there. So I you know, that is something encouraging as we wait to see what, you know, what this team does at the deadline. You know, now, you know, it looks like they will have that cap space with the Evander Kane situation, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to bring somebody in. You know, and then, you know, Connor and Leon are, you know, Leon right now, it's interesting. Leon is with no goals in back-to-back games for Dreisaitl. He hasn't gone 3 in a row this year without a goal. So something just to watch for tonight. And it's, you know, he's having that MVP type year.
Yeah. That's enough about the Oilers doing well. We can.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I know. Yeah.
Where are we on this? Where are we on this Ducks group right now? Like it feels like maybe they've taken a slight step from being bottom of the Western Conference to slightly more competitive. But where are we on this Ducks team more than halfway through their season?
Well, okay. So definitely more competitive. I mean, the fact that, you know, look, they've got wins. You know, they beat Dallas on the road. They beat Winnipeg on the road. They beat New Jersey on the road. They beat Edmonton at home, and they were, what, about a minute and 50 from going to overtime with Edmonton in Edmonton earlier in the year. Don't sleep on this team, because they'll bite you. And, you know, they own the biggest upset of the NHL season this year. That game in Carolina, the Carolina Hurricanes, I got into a bit of an argument with somebody who said, I'm not talking betting. And I'm like, well, how do you measure what the greatest upset is? The Carolina Hurricanes were -500 on Sunday against Anaheim. That is the biggest upset of the NHL year, when Anaheim, you know, has that lead, the 2-0 lead, the Canes come back and tie it, and then Anaheim wins in overtime. And again, in a game where Cutter Gauthier, after that, what happened in Philadelphia, bounces back with a pair of goals in the game winner. So, you know, you got to be careful being the opposition. I think it was a spot for Carolina that day where, you know, they just come off playing a bunch of tough games against the East, and I don't think, you know, it was their best performance that day. But regardless, Anaheim has shown the ability to beat good teams, and both at home and on the road.
Yep. And they kind of feels like some of those young players have started to take steps, which has been interesting to see. And they've still got some pretty good veterans. Everybody points to, JD, the difference since Jonathan Trouba has arrived in that trade with the New York Rangers. Like, have you seen Jacob Trouba since? Thank you. I don't know who Jonathan Trouba is, but have you seen a difference since Jacob Trouba has arrived in Anaheim?
Well, they were still getting some of those wins earlier in the year. I think that there's just more of a belief in the team overall. And look, Trouba and Gudas give them those twin towers back there, and it opens up ice for players. They'll absolutely police things out there for this team. So there's, you know, the addition of Trouba and, you know, with Gudas helps this team for sure on the ice. I don't know if it's made. I just think we're seeing, you know, Troy Terry was gone for a while. He's now back. But, you know, look, guys like Carlson and Strome and Vetrano continue, you know, are having decent years. Not off the charts. You'll take a while. You have to scroll through about 2 or 3 NHL pages before you find a Ducks player, you know, on the scoring race. But, you know, the big thing for Anaheim is goalie. You know, Lucas Dostal is showing that he is a number one goalie. We'll see what happens with John Gibson. And, you know, for me, though, there's one stat that just is remarkable to me with Anaheim. They're 17-1 this year when they score at least 3 goals. I haven't done every team. I've done probably about 3/4 of the league. The LA Kings, I think, are 20-2. That's the next best record. But I haven't found a team yet that's got few, you know, that's perfect, or at least even has one loss when scoring at least three goals. It's been very impressive with Anaheim that they're, you know, that they've got that type of record by scoring three. Conversely, the Philadelphia Flyers have 14 losses when scoring three goals this year. That's the most that I've found in the league, which explains their bad goaltending situation in Philly. Now, just to circle back to Gibson, I think, you know, I've got three teams in my radar for John Gibson: Carolina Hurricanes, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I think that other Alberta team that we won't mention by name. But I look at Columbus and Pat, they're 0-6 this year on the back end of back-to-backs. If they had a better goaltending situation, let's say they get themselves, you know, I can't recall if they got a loser point in there, but look, you know, even if they get to 3-3, you know, it's going to, that puts them in a far better spot, you know, for a playoff position. So I think Columbus is a team that is very, makes a lot of sense for John Gibson. And I think they've got the parts that they could work a deal with the Anaheim Ducks.
Let's finish with Seattle. Is it time for the Kraken to sell? They've kind of, mathematically, they're still there in a playoff conversation. Realistically, they're not. Is it time for Seattle to enter sell mode?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, maybe it's a guy like Jamie Oleksiak that they move. Like, I don't think you want to move too many pieces. Like, you know, you made this investment in Montour, and you made the investment in Chandler Stephenson with the idea, you know, that you're trying to get yourself playoff ready, you know, whether it's going to be this year or the year or, you know, 2 years from now. So let's be careful about what you move. But, you know, definitely, I think you have to start looking at trying to trade some pieces. And because, they've got five teams to climb over to get themselves in a wild card spot. I think I think four of those five teams have played less games than them. So the numbers aren't very good for Seattle. If I'm them, I'm starting, you know, I'm listening to, you know, whatever offers, you know, if that's a Bjorkstrand or trying to think of some of the other pieces that they could move. I mean, I don't know if Shane Wright, you know, if there's value there, but I think you have to just start looking at, you know, you're definitely listening a lot more now than I think you were a week, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago. But they're not a playoff team. Like, you know, look, last night was great, fine. They came back, they beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got their own issues. But if I'm Seattle, I'm not looking at myself as a team that's a legit playoff team contender for this year.
Is that anything to say about Vegas, or are we just kind of like, Vegas is, they're going to win the division. They're going to make the playoffs.
Here's the one thing that Vegas needs to work on, because if they do make it to the finals, they're going to have to figure out how to beat a team from the East. Like they're six. I think they've got six of their, or they're 6-8 against the East this year. You know, at least they've lost eight times, you know, add in maybe an overtime game in there, but they've got eight losses. They're under 500 against the East. So that's the one thing they haven't figured out. But people talk about Eichel, Stone, Hurdle. Those are the names that most talk about. Pavel Dorofeev has got five goals in the last two games. He's their leading scorer. Brett Howden is tied, I think, for second on the team with 15 goals. They're getting production out of those guys. That's a scary thing for the rest of the league.
Great stuff as always, JD. Perfect as always. We will talk to you next week. We'll spin around the Pacific Division again, but glad you're safe in SoCal, and stay safe down there, hey?
All right, bud. Take care. Thanks.
Be well. Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider, and also, always spins us around the Pacific Division from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3300. 33-44 as we start to wrap things up this hour. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers, our outstanding producer this hour, Shan Virgie. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.